Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 30th, 2005. Today's session is entitled Tsunami Relief in North Sumatra, presented by Paul Harder. Disc number HAP-2005-01.
I'm Paul Harder. I was called by the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America to be a missionary to Indonesia in 1992. And I spent most of the 90s there, well, all of the 90s. And I happened to develop a topic for my PhD dissertation that involved the Lutheran people of North Sumatra. The Lutherans in North Sumatra, I'll give a session next week about them. They have a wonderful, warm group of 9 million. Well, actually, the Lutheran church is about 5 million. However, it's the largest Lutheran church in Asia, and very few people know anything about them. So that's going to be a topic for next week. This session, for the next hour together, we're going to have a difficult time looking at some images. Difficult because no one really wants to revisit ugliness, especially the media does so well with it at a certain time period, and now it's over. So we're going to revisit this a little bit. December 26, 2004, in Aceh. The province of Aceh is on the north tip of the island of Sumatra. Let me draw a quick map here. If everybody can see this. Sumatra sort of ends like this, if you can picture this. And then over here is Malaysia and Singapore and Thailand. Phuket got a lot of press. So picture this as Thailand and then the famous resort of Phuket in Thailand. However, up here, there's a province called Aceh. I'll quickly draw this in here. And up here is a city, a large city called Banda Aceh, which in the local tongue means Port of Aceh. It's a good-sized city. And on December 26, 2004, they were hit the hardest by the tsunami. I want to focus, instead of on statistics, so we can do statistics all day regarding the tsunami, in the entire part of Aceh where the tsunamis were hit, between 190 to 250,000 people died. Sri Lanka and India, probably between 30 and 50,000 people died, and then in Thailand, much less. So the devastation in Banda Aceh was the largest of any area hit by the tsunami. But for political reasons and reasons of culture and language, it's not that well known. I want to focus this morning on one church, one parish, the Lutheran Church in Banda Aceh. It's going to be our topic for the next hour. Now, why only this Lutheran parish? Okay, there's four parishes in Banda Aceh. Aceh itself is one of the strongest Muslim provinces of Indonesia. It's called Serambi Mecca, the Veranda of Mecca. Why is it called the Veranda of Mecca? Because it was on the major trade route from east to west between Mecca and the Arabian Peninsula, and everywhere else out east here, in the Muslim areas in Indonesia and Malaysia. So it's a strongly Muslim area, perhaps 98% Muslim, but there are four Lutheran parishes, or four Protestant parishes, and one Roman Catholic parish in the city of Banda Aceh. They were equally hit hard. The Lutheran parish in Banda Aceh went from 600 baptized members on their rolls to 500 in a matter of 2 hours. On 8:30 in the morning, Sunday morning, December 26th, one day after Christmas, all the Christmas decorations are still up, and I will show a video that no one else has seen before. You'll be the first ones to see it. That was produced by the Lutheran Church of Indonesia when they sent a relief crew up there 1 week after the tsunami. That parish, as I said, went from 600 baptized members to 500 baptized members. in the space of 2 hours. 8:30 Sunday morning, they were preparing to worship. The staff was there, the Sunday school teachers, and the pastor was still in his home. But the parishioners, thankfully, had not yet shown up. The earthquake hit at 8:30, and an hour and a half later, the waves came. The waves are generally agreed that there were two of them. The first one was called the yellow wave, and the second one was called the black wave. And the second one was regarded as being the much more devastating. Swept up in it's sort of a 30-foot high. It wasn't a wall. It came very the waves came very slow. But if you were I went there in February, so that's why I'm talking about this. The ELCA Center sent me to checkup and relief work, and I went 6 weeks after this video was produced. Anyway, to get back to that Sunday morning, if you've been down to the creek, Railroad Creek, if you've stepped into it, anybody stepped into it? Yeah, it's fast moving, right? I haven't stepped into it, but 6 inches of that water, you can feel it. And 8 inches of that water, you know, eight or more inches, it gets up to your knees and you are going to get
knocked over.
You might get knocked over. So that's how the wave came. It slowly came. It didn't slowly come. It came at about between 80 and 100 miles an hour. I spoke with one young guy who tried to outrun it on his motorcycle. He couldn't do it. And he luckily lost his, he lost his motorcycle, but then was able to get into a building that had a second story and then was saved. So the yellow wave came fast and low and slow, and people didn't know what to make of it because there hasn't been a tsunami there in hundreds of years. So people were slowly swept up in it as the water rose to almost 30 feet near the coast. And as I said, about a third of the population of the city of Banda Aceh were lost in that. Sunday morning, as I'll show after the video, I'll show some slides that I took. Sunday morning was a time when local army battalions were out marching. There was two Indonesian army battalions just lost. They're gone. And there was a city function. The mayor was out there with most of his staff on the city parade grounds. They were giving out awards. The city of Aceh lost 80% of its administration on that Sunday morning. So it was a very devastating time. Like I said, there was four Protestant churches, one Roman Catholic church, and then the video that we're going to see in a minute was produced by the Lutheran Church of Sumatra. It's called the Batak Lutheran Church. Batak is the name of the ethnic group up there. They are mainly in a band, an area here. This area is called the province of North Sumatra, and this is called Aceh. The Batak are an ethnic group that come from this province of North Sumatra, but they migrated elsewhere. So the Batak Lutheran Church, B-A-T-A-K, I'm not saying Batak, by the way, Batak means is the name of that ethnic group, and they're all Lutheran, members of Lutheran World Federation, and so on. Their churchwide body produced this video a week after the tsunami, and I'm supposed to let you know that there are graphic images in this, but they're not too bad. The bodies are covered with mud, and they're practically indistinguishable. But this video, it's 8 minutes long. And it was produced, again, by the Batak Lutheran Church in support of their relief work that they did. After I show the video, I will then show a slideshow, show pictures of my trip there and explain more what the Lutheran Church is doing, both the ELCA and many different church bodies, what they're doing, what they have done in the short-term, medium-term, and then in the long-term. I just want to ask, how many of you gave to some tsunami relief program? That's pretty much everybody. Yeah. Me too. I mean, I gave as well. What organizations did you give to? Just, yeah?
Mercy Corps.
Mercy Corps? I haven't heard of that. Where's that from?
Portland. But it's worldwide.
Okay. And then do you know where, what organization, or was it Mercy Corps that had a representative in?
They had relief groups,
uh-huh.
And it's pretty medically oriented.
Okay. So it was probably involved in the short-term traumatic sort of relief work.
I think they're still there.
Yeah.
I receive updates from Mercy Corps from time to time, but I was just interested to find out about the rebuilding and the health issues and all of that.
Mm-hmm. What other places did people give
Lutheran Federation.
Lutheran Federation, good. We're going to see a representative of theirs that was working that I met with. What other organizations?
ELCA.
ELCA?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had a special tsunami relief fund too. I'll talk later about where your money went, but let's first let's get through sort of the event itself. Again, emphasize the video comes was made January 8th when they were still beginning the reconstruction. Even though reconstruction is really not the word. Because, you know, if you've lost a loved one, you know that there's always that little black hole in your heart that never goes away. And same thing with this, the reconstruction is really not the word. It's sort of finding some new path, the people up there. So, all right, let me roll this video. It's in Indonesian, it's in the Indonesian language, but I'll play it anyway and translate little bits of it.
Okay, we should have video now.
I think you have to press the button a little bit longer.
Oh, really?
Oh, there it
is. There it is.
The first part of the video is the executive secretary of the Batak Lutheran Church, him talking about their relief work. I'm going to skip over that because you don't want to hear somebody speak. I mean, he's a nice guy. His name is Willem Simarmata. He's a friend of mine, but he's speaking Indonesian. I suppose you don't want to listen to that. Or...
Okay.
Tsunami yang warga jemaat kita. Kami sampaikan banyak terima kasih atas upaya teman-teman kita yang telah berangkat dari Aceh.
Now the video footage begins.
It
says, let us pray together so that our nation may be healed. To overcome the disaster. Thank you, Lord, bless us. This is the Lutheran Sunday School room, and on the right is the Lutheran parish in Banda Aceh. 1 week after, that wall blew in and 40 bodies were deposited inside with all the mud and filth. Most of the bodies have been removed at this point.
So they were not in the church at the time?
No, because services had not begun. But still, bodies were everywhere. This is the back of the churchyard. That's the parsonage. It was not blown down. Behind that palm tree was the home of a deaconess, which was lost. That's the secretariat building for the youth organization. That's the pulpit inside the Lutheran church. There's Christmas decorations you can see. Here they're going through all the mud and debris. They took all the pews outside. He said 42 corpses were found inside the church, but they were not church members.
a sacristy in the back. And when I was there, they found a body there 7 weeks after the tsunami. In that sacristy.
Relative to the rest of Indonesia prior to the tsunami, was this a highly developed or a poor part?
Oh, it was a major city.
So what wasn't unusual?
What wasn't unusual?
Well, in terms of the economic level.
It was a medium-sized city that was a hub in Southeast Asia. This is the coastal neighborhoods, which were all devastated. That obelisk in the back, the water reached the top of that obelisk.
Wow.
40,000 people died in these coastal neighborhoods alone. This music was added by the Lutheran Church there when they produced this video. Anybody know who this artist is?
When troubles come and my heart burdened be, then I am still and wait here in silence till you come and sit well with me.
These neighborhoods used to be filled with houses. Took in those who lost their houses. That's the pastor right there in the middle.
So this means a lot of their jobs were lost too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. This guy's part of the team that came up there. This is, we'll see more slides of this. This is a refugee camp.
Refugees from that city.
From that city that lost their homes and
yeah.
This is a business meeting of the Lutheran Church discussing with some of the refugees. It said there's 100 refugees from the parish. And they're talking about where they're going to resettle the 100 refugees. That's the bishop of Aceh, Midian Surai. This meeting took place in the capital city of Medan. That's Nelson Surigar, head of the Lutheran Church's Diakonia service organization. These are some orphans. There was approximately 40 orphans from that parish. Christmas trees are still up, and that's the end of it. It says thank you to all the parties who believed in us during this difficult time. I said the Lutheran Church is an ethnic church, the Batak Lutherans, and this is actually pictures of the Lake Toba, which is their heartland, south, which is south of Aceh.
Okay.
Are there any questions that I can speak to after just seeing the video?
The area that was devastated along the waterway there, was that where the poor lived, or the
They were actually middle class houses that they weren't poor. No, they were middle class family homes, single family homes on the coastal areas. If I could draw another map here. Lost my pen, but the city of Banda Aceh was also sort of like a rounded sort of you might say peninsula into the Indian Ocean, and all the coastal neighborhoods, which were single family homes, and were becoming quite luxurious because everybody wants real estate on the water, and those were all lost, all those homes, and all the property records from the city were lost as well. I'll show some more detailed pictures of the houses and what happened afterwards. Because now, if there's no property records in the city office,
What was the time frame between the first wave and the second?
About 20 minutes. The first wave, the yellow wave, came in fast and low, and then the black wave, which was filled, it's like a soup. If you can imagine a soup filled with barbed wire and sharp metal slats and wood and bodies. And I'm going to show a slide of a woman who saved herself by jumping onto a large wooden board and sort of surfing down the main street on this black wave, the second wave. So some people were able to, if you could get out of the wave, you could be saved.
You said the pastor was in the parsonage?
That's correct.
How did he
pastor's family was in the parsonage, but the pastor happened to be out of town that day.
Oh.
And it's created just between us. I don't think anybody's going to reveal this, but between us, it created a pastoral problem in the parish, because the people then said, well, you weren't even here, pastor, what do you know? And so there developed a sort of a faction within the church, the Lutheran Church in Banda Aceh, that promoted their own sort of pastoral ministers. And so now you're all members of parishes, all these dynamics work.
What happened to his family? Was his family?
The family was saved. And I don't know, I never met the family. I met him, the head pastor. I don't know their story. But they were not lost. Yeah.
How did this affect relations among the different Christian groups and with Muslims in that area?
At first, everyone helped out, as is the Indonesian custom. Regardless of religious affiliation, everybody pulled together, and the Indonesian word is gotong royong, which means collective engagement. Regardless of class, race, status, or religion, people all pulled together. However, things did happen, and the Methodist Church in Banda Aceh, the Methodist Church in Sumatra is generally Chinese. There's a large group of Chinese there who came over the last hundreds of years. And the Chinese generally are a wealthier class. They're traders, merchants, business people. And so the Methodist Church in Banda Aceh was damaged slightly, just like the Lutheran Church, not structurally, but, and they quickly, the Methodist Church too quickly, poured money into reconstruction, cleaning the building, and that set off some stonings. There were some youths who came and broke some windows in the building because they were doing it a little too quickly, people before buildings type idea. And so then the Chinese Methodist Church backed off from cleaning up their building and followed the pattern of everybody else. Collect the bodies first, and then you can work on the property.
Now, prior to this, over the past several years, I've heard in the news about a lot of problems in the Aceh province. And is that an area of unusually large hostility, Muslim, Christian, so forth?
Muslim, Christian, no, because it's like 98% Muslim. And there hasn't, and areas that have a lot of conflict in Indonesia generally are more 50-50, 50% Muslim, 50% Christian. The conflict that you're talking about is an insurgency that's about 25 years old. It's called the Achenese Freedom Movement that's sought independence from Indonesia in order to have, because Achenese have been always independent, more Arab, more associating themselves with the Arab traditions than with native Indonesian traditions. And so for the last 25 years, there's been this separatist movement. And just last week in Helsinki, they signed a peace accord. So everyone is hoping that that will go ahead. And there will be some limited autonomy for the province of Aceh. But the Christians have been relatively untouched. The Lutherans in North Sumatra are famous for eating a lot of pork. And so that's not a very, that's obviously not a Muslim custom, because Muslims don't eat pork. And so the Muslims would come to the Lutheran church and say, you know, we're happy to have you as part of the community, but just please do not slaughter pigs in the streets. Because the Batak Lutherans, one of their festivals that they have in churches as well. For the church picnic, they'll slaughter a pig and roast it in the church area. Any other questions? Now I'll talk about, we're going to my visit, which took place 6 weeks after the video which you just saw. The video which you just saw is dates from January 8th through the 10th, and then I was there at the end of February. I'll talk to them if I show these slides. Any visit to North Sumatra begins with the large city of Medan, and that involves malls like this one that are very luxurious and full of everything that you can find at the Mall of America or wherever you go. There's even Pamela, what's her name? Paris Hilton, selling Guess jeans in the world's largest Muslim country. Outside the mall, there's typically luxury cars, and then there is these becaks, which are motorcycle taxis. And this is in the airport waiting to go to Aceh. All these guys in red vests are from Team Honda. Honda, which obviously you know is a very large car and motorcycle manufacturer, sent teams of mechanics to Banda Aceh to repair motorcycles. So these guys are going to go up there and live for 4 days. They're mechanics from all over Indonesia, paid for by Honda to go repair motorcycles, which is the major form of transportation outside urban areas. Because everyone can afford a motorcycle, not everyone can afford a car in Indonesia. These are the refugee camps that are more or less semi-permanent at this point, until the wooden refugee houses get built. This is sort of the short-term refugee housing, and then medium-term, which is now, there are some wooden refugee housing that has gone up. These are orphans that are staying in the refugee in the refugee camp there. They're happy and they play.
What does his shirt mean? You
know? The one with the red stripe through it. It says anti-KKN. KKN is an acronym for nepotism, corruption, and I forget what the third one is. It's a sort of a people's movement to erase corruption in the Indonesian government, and then it's a grassroots movement to clean up the government, and they give out free T-shirts. We're back. The order is a little bit screwed up here. This is a Russian-made plane that's still ferrying supplies. We're back at the refugee camp. This is a school, a Quran school, that's being run inside the refugee camp. The woman with the veil in white, with a white veil, is teaching them. About half of these kids are orphans and half still are with their families. This is coming out of the airport. Because there were so many relief planes still coming in, the passenger planes had to hike about a half mile to get to the terminal. And on the left, on the right is the normal terminal, air traffic control. On the left is the Turkish Army air traffic control, which was coordinating all the relief traffic, military traffic, and the airport in Banda Aceh. Okay, this is a picture of the parsonage in the backyard of the church, the Lutheran church. Again, this was about 7 weeks, almost 8 weeks after the tsunami. And on the right would have been the deaconess house, which didn't survive. The deaconess, I'll show you a picture of her later, I'll tell her story in a minute. The parsonage did survive, but all its doors were blown out. And when I was there, they were just getting around to putting the doors back on. This is the Sunday school building. This is about midday, and the worker in the middle is taking a nap. You can see him. They would get, the workers came from a church organization called ACT, Action of Churches Together. You may have heard about it. It's the major partner for the ELCA and other churches. As well, that is the major relief organization that the ELCA partners with. Their lunch meals would come from a Korean relief aid organization, and he's taking a nap before going back to work.
Now we're close to the equator here, right?
Yeah, pretty much on the equator. The equator goes through the middle of Sumatra.
What's the yellow substance? Is that dirt?
Yeah, that's the clay or the soil in Banda Aceh, and it gets everywhere. It coats your throat. The dirt is just everywhere in the dust. You can see the tank tread marks from the back the loader or the front end loader that they were using. This is some debris inside the church. Looks like an old PA amplifier fan. There's debris everywhere and Christmas decorations. As you drive through Banda Aceh, the most, at that time, and I think still, the most stunning thing is boats everywhere. Because you had, up to 20 to 30 feet of water that just swept boats in the middle of town. And some buildings survived in certain neighborhoods and some didn't. That's a fishing trawler, because fishing was one of the major industries of Aceh. Now here you can see some of the devastation of the coastal village, or coastal neighborhoods. All the land and records were lost, but if you could find the foundation of your family home, you could stake a claim. However, in recent months, the government has decided that there'll be no rebuilding in these coastal neighborhoods. If you can see the trees on the far edge, you see those trees far away? That is the beach, and that's about a mile away, would you say? A mile and a half? Still a mile and a half away. In the middle of this picture are tents. If there were some surviving family members, you would come and try to get your land back. And pitch a tent and put up an Indonesian flag.
So what will happen to those people that own property where they're not allowed to rebuild?
According to the Indonesian government reconstruction plan, they will be allotted land in a different part of the town, which means probably far up in the hills somewhere. This house survived, and some family member from this house came back and wrote in Indonesian, "Pemilik rumah masih hidup," the owner of this house still lives. And 25404 Visca, I'm thinking that must be a permit number, a building permit number, and then Visca must be some acronym for property rights. So some people came back and tried to retake possession of their homes. This is right on the beach, and the water covered this house, and it's really unknown why this structure survived. In the middle of town is this barge, which is from the government electricity company. It's a generator barge that they would often use in certain cities, coastal cities, to generate electricity. And here it is in the middle of town.
How did they ever move something like that?
They didn't. The wave did.
No, it's going to be there forever.
Oh. There was a talk, I think I can go back here. There was a talk when I was there that they're going to make it into a monument.
Yeah.
And you can see how long it is. It must be 200 feet long. But it has a short draft, so you can see it was easy to flow into the city. Yeah, they're talking about making a monument to the number of boats that were in the middle of town. This is the municipal parade ground with an airplane that commemorates some sort of battle or some Indonesian history. But this was the field that the municipal government was having an exercise in, an award ceremony. I forget exactly. They were awarding something to municipal employees, and they were all swept away that morning. The only buildings that were largely untouched by the tsunami in Banda Aceh were mosques. Now, why is that? Because Islamic architecture generally has an open floor plan. This is the famous Baitur Rahman Mosque in central Banda Aceh. It dates from the 17th century. It's a very old mosque. And even though the water reached up to, you see the tower on the left. The water here reached up to the second level, if you can see the second row of, the second row there. The water reached up to there, but because Islamic architecture has an open floor plan on the bottom, the water goes through, and it didn't collapse walls. And it was seen as a sign, a providential sign, that God was still with the people.
God was with the Muslims.
Now that all four churches, all five churches in Banda Aceh also survived.
Oh,
yeah. So. And then there's cars. The city is littered with cars that were swept through. In the refugee camps, there's plastered everywhere these homemade signs. Most people, just like in America, have color printers, where people quickly put out these flyers. This one says Dicari, which means being sought for. This girl's name is Azan Putra. Her nickname is Pupu. The name of her father is Bandar Johan. At the time of the... Jeez, I should wear my glasses. At the time of the tsunami, this victim was in front of the Lamdingan Mosque. Whoever finds her, please ring Azhari, and it's a number of his cell phone. So wherever there's an empty space, just like after 9/11 in New York, there's a...
What does the M period stand for? Is that miss, or...?
I'm thinking it must be a common name that they just abbreviated.
Oh, okay, like Mary.
Mary, I don't know what it would be.
Yeah.
But her nickname was Puput anyway.
Yeah.
And this is in the refugee camp, just a list of all the like kids. Are they all kids?
Yeah.
And here again is another.
A list of children looking for parents.
So the bottom line is in English, yeah, so it's list of lost, list of children looking for parents.
Didn't they have, in some places, parents or people that were saying, this child is mine, because maybe they had lost theirs, but it really wasn't? They were using DNA that...
That happened in Sri Lanka. I read
somewhere where it did.
I can't imagine there's any DNA testing in Indonesia, so... this is a Red Cross, International Committee of the Red Cross. Shows these people who are looking for their relatives. These are kids looking for their relatives. Children who are searching for their family as of 11 February 2005. You can see Team Honda, that's where they set up, or one group of mechanics set up, because the waves took up all the motorcycles, and but they could be refurbished. And so in this refugee camp, there's a Team Honda station. Life goes on. Green coconut milk is a famous refreshing drink in the tropics. This guy is slicing off the top, and he'll put a straw in it for you. These are kids from the refugee camps playing. And that was the most hardest thing to think about, is that they're still kids and they're playing like nothing ever happened. These two guys are orphans. I met their teacher. I talked with their teacher. This is an odd thing. This is the International Scientology Assist Team. That is the Scientologists were some of the first religious aid groups to come to Aceh, and they were offering what's called an assist. I never heard about this, but I understand Tom Cruise gets these all the time when he's on the set. He has a special Scientologist, a massage therapist, to give an assist. An assist, according to Scientology, and I never knew this before, is a massage. It's a Scientological massage that's given by a Scientologist to release some, or to help some, I don't know, some metaphysical part of your body that needs help. They were offering this to victims. This is a police, what's it called?
Helicopter.
Yeah, well, this is a police helicopter, but there was two regiments of police that had a base on the east side of Banda Aceh, and they were exercising that morning, and they couldn't get the helicopters off the ground in time. It shows you how quick it happened. And two of these helicopters were in the main field. This is the police compound, the police barracks and base. Police in Indonesia are a national agency, and so they have their own bases. And this was completely devastated. This is one of the neighborhoods that was worst hit. And the beach, again, is those trees on the far edge of the landscape. And in the fore and to the right, there's the some earth mover. Someone has found the foundation of their house and set up a little shelter there. This is a picture of medium-term refugee housing. So the money that you've given, is going currently to building places like this. And this is far away from the road, but you see in the background these wooden longhouses that can accommodate families, and then they have an outhouse in the back. So there are latrines in the back that are not connected to the city plumbing. But there's a front room and a back room and a kitchen area in the back with a latrine in the back as well. This is medium-term housing that probably will go on for 10 years before they finally get people resettled into new plots of land. This is a police boat in the middle of town. This is again driving through Banda Aceh. Now we're back at the Lutheran Church for worship on Sunday morning. I was there on a Sunday, and I brought the message to them, and you can see the truck is from the UN, and then that's the Sunday school building again. POSCO is a word that they used all the time. It stands for command post. In Indonesian, it's a post command, command post. And this one was established in the Sunday school rooms to give out aid to the parishioners of the Lutheran parish in Banda Aceh. And you can see the little sticker above the POSCO that says ACT. ACT is the body that the ELCA is using, a consortium of churches they're using as their main relief agency. So on that Sunday morning, in the back of the churchyard still looked like this. And we met, on the left is an ELCA pastor named Beeman Limbong. He's pastor of St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Anchorage, Alaska. He and I were the two people that the ELCA asked to visit the Lutheran Church in Aceh. And on the right is the deaconess who survived that morning by climbing onto a board. She said the board was about, probably about the size of that whiteboard. During the second wave, the black wave, she managed to get on top of a piece of wood. And from there, there was a boat going by. You know, I showed the pictures of the boats that were deposited in the middle of town. She managed to climb onto one of these boats that were just empty. No people in the boats. They were just going through the streets. And she was able to save herself. But her mother and father and grandparents were not so lucky. This is a close-up of, you can see communion glasses in the top part. HKBP is the name of the Lutheran Church, the Hodia Christen Batak Protestant. And this is in the sacristy, which was blown down. They had just had, they were preparing to have communion. Or they just had communion on December 25th, I forget. I think it was they had communion for Christmas. And it was all blown away in the sacristy. And these are some of the kids who were in the refugee camps, and they love to mug for the camera, like this guy. They love to get their pictures taken. On Sunday morning, the guy on the left is a German army chaplain who happened to be there bringing a gift from the German community in the Indonesian capital city of Jakarta. And on the right is the pastor of the German congregation in Jakarta, greeting Reverend Limbong from Alaska. Beeman Limbong is a Batak himself. He's from Indonesia. And so it's like coming home for him. On the left is a pastor named Elias Tambunan. He's a Lutheran pastor currently doing graduate work, and he lost 15 members of his family because they all lived in the suburban, in the coastal neighborhoods. On the right is the pastor of the Lutheran Church in Banda Aceh, Raja Guguk is his name. And on the left, Reverend Tambunan is currently looking for a scholarship so he can write his master's thesis on theology after a tsunami. He wants to write this next academic year on Lutheran theology after the tsunami. So this is the children's choir that are practicing before the service. If you remember what it looked like in the video, which we watched earlier, this is what the church looked like 8 weeks after. It's been cleaned up. And this is an organization by Franklin Graham called, what's Franklin? The son of Samaritan's Purse. Samaritan's Purse gave out toys. So on Sunday morning, all the kids of the Lutheran parish, all the other parishes as well, received a huge box of toys from Samaritan's Purse, which was an organization organized by, I think, Billy Graham himself, or maybe only Franklin Graham, giving out toys to all the kids. And that's the toys that they gave out to all the kids on Sunday morning. After the service, they gave out they allocated relief funds to each of the families. So each family would receive, say, $30 to cover some expenses involving food and other things. This money comes directly from the Batak Lutheran Church, the Indonesian Lutheran Church, but also augmented by funds from you, who've given to LWF, ELCA, various places, various organizations like that. Everybody comes after church and they receive their portion and get their name checked off. And then, so that everything is transparent, everybody knows how much everybody else got. So everybody's name is posted there. And this is what it looks like cleaned up. And above the pulpit, the new pulpit is, they have, still have a thing on the Merry Christmas. I wonder if they ever will. We'll have to, if anybody of you goes, you'll have to check that out for us. And this is again a list of donations that people have given to the church, the Lutheran church there. And that's the end of the slideshow. We'll end up back in the capital city, of malls, and so on. Right.
Had you been to this church before the crisis happened?
Not in Aceh, because Aceh was closed to foreigners, but since 1980. And but I've lived up in North Sumatra for a year. I've visited there. I visited there a lot. So anybody know how to turn lights on? I did research there for the 2002-2003 academic year, but I was in this area down here, and Aceh was closed. But now Aceh is open, and as I said last week in Helsinki, the peace accords were finally signed between the Acehnese freedom movement and the Indonesian government. So hopefully that will help the situation. Yeah.
Was Indonesia one of the countries that quickly asked for all of the Western aid or whatever to leave?
No, that never happened. There was a number of things that they immediately did. Like said, there will be no international adoption. All orphans from the tsunami will be kept in Indonesia. There was a ban on religious proselytizing. Even though you still read, if you read newspaper, Indonesian newspapers from this area, you still find little stories that a box of relief goods that was received in this village was found to contain Bibles. And so there are some Christian relief organizations that do put tracts and Bibles inside relief goods. And that's considered by the Muslim community to be an annoyance and not so much a provocation, per se.
There was also some problem, question about military assistance and how long that would stay there.
That's been an ongoing issue because the Indonesian military has been involved in the suppression of indigenous people, like in Papua, West Papua. And so there's been an ongoing thing about whether Congress should allow them F-16s to be sold to Indonesia. But for the most part, it's the military has acquitted themselves pretty responsibly, the Indonesian military.
Mm-hmm. Question up here.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned briefly about some of the problems of the Chinese Christians, and I gather they were Methodists. I remember in about 98, there was a movement to, I think, basically exterminate the Chinese Christians in Jakarta and other places. And I even got one family over in the United States. I heard directly from them what they had experienced. In the tsunami relief problems, were there unique problems with the Chinese Christians helping? I noticed that most of the members of the Lutheran Church looked like they were of Indonesian background. were there also Chinese Christians helping, or were they discriminated against, or what currently is the situation with Chinese Christians as well as all other Christians?
The Chinese in Indonesia are maybe a third Christian. I should say Chinese Indonesians. They've been there hundreds of years. But they're still set apart by race. They're regarded as an elite, sort of a pariah group, sort of like the Jews in Europe before the Holocaust. They're wealthy, they're educated, they own all the big businesses in whatever sized town. And so they become a target during times of economic crisis. They become a target of mobs. And so, yes, in 98, there was anti-Chinese riots in Jakarta and everywhere in Indonesia. And periodically, when economic conditions get bad enough, it'll bubble up. Anti-Chinese stuff will bubble up again. Stone the Chinese shops. After the tsunami, the Chinese community basically fled Banda Aceh. And it's only been in the last month I've heard a couple of reports that the Chinese are bringing back their capital, because the Chinese community is the community that has the capital to start up new businesses, to fill a shop with goods, to set up a motorcycle a place that sells motorcycles. And so finally, in the last few months, the Chinese are starting to return, and that's a hopeful sign.
Mm-hmm. What about jobs? How are they supporting themselves?
A lot of the work in the first 2 months, people were paid to search out bodies, the immediate reconstruction and relief. A lot of people found work with that, like ACT. Action for Churches Together would pay hundreds of people a daily wage to do basic cleanup and recovery of bodies. One body was found when I was there at the Lutheran Church in the sacristy that was blown away, and they identified the body in a way that was quite common at that time. There was lots of people, like here in the U.S., have cell phones. So a number of the bodies that were recovered had cell phones on them. So they take, if anybody of you has a singular account, the GSM network uses these little SIM chips. So they find the phone on the body, which was badly decomposed, and the smell was just, even 8 weeks later, it was just unimaginable. They take the SIM chip out of the cell phone, put it in a good phone, and then there will be the calling list of the person who had the phone, and they would start calling. Are you a relative of this person? So,
and then that would show up that person's number on the.
Who is this person?
Incredible.
And so that little SIM card in the phone would have the list of all the loved ones of the person who had it. That was a very common way of identifying people when the body could not be identified.
Were there lots of animals and also?
Strangely enough. The animals, most of them survived, like dogs, cats. The animals apparently fled into the after
I
the
earthquake. I heard that they hadn't seen many dead animals because for some reason the animals had all fled before the floods happened, and to watch the animals.
But then certain regiments of the Indonesian military were given the task of shooting all the dogs because the dogs were feeding on the corpses that were not... because there was 200,000 people dead. And that's a lot of bodies.
Well, and assumably a lot of the bodies would have been washed out to sea.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Was fishing a part of their national economy? Thank you.
Yes, it was a large part of it, and so the boats that did survive that could be reconstructed. It's coming back. A lot of the relief bodies are involved in that, purchasing supplies for the fishing community.
So
So right after the waves, they'll say, you know, when you know everything's been destroyed and you need food, could they go out and fish again? Or had the whole fishing ecology of the ocean been so changed that there were no fish? Or
I didn't hear much about the ecology, but one thing that, I was told was that people stopped eating fish. I didn't really inquire too closely about why that was, but I think it was...
Well, it was because the fish presumably could have eaten human flesh.
Sure.
Right, and so nobody... The price of meat was sky high at that point. But people were eating lamb, or what they normally eat, lamb and beef and chicken, but the prices were high, even though there was fish available. But there weren't that many fishermen, but at the same time, people just said they refused to eat fish.
What was your work there before the tsunami?
From 92 to 99, I taught at a seminary in the island of Java. Sumatra is about the size of California and Oregon combined. It's a long island like that. And then Java is down here. It's a short island about the size of Tennessee, but it has 120 million people in it. And we were in a town that was known for its universities, a town called Yogyakarta. And I taught at Duduwachani University, and it's a reformed institution. It's the place where I showed the picture of the pastor who was doing graduate work, who lost 15 members of his family. He's studying there right now, so that's how I know him.
There was quite a lot written about the relief agencies and the kind of relief and the timing of the relief a lot of people gave at the very beginning, and then there was a worry about whether in the long run there would be enough. Is it your impression that at least in this area that the right kind of relief got there and enough, and is there still a need?
I only went to Banda Aceh, and as far as I could see, what relief was, there was lots of relief work going on. There was lots of front-end loaders and bulldozers and all that stuff working. At the time, it was the best place to get sick in Indonesia because the hospital was staffed by German doctors who brought in all new CAT scan machinery and all that stuff. But I was only in that capital city of Banda Aceh. Outside in the coastal areas, which were fishing communities here, not so much here, but mainly on the west coast, especially towns here, it's much, much worse. Roads are washed out, outside of Banda Aceh, it's mainly women who were lost in the tsunami. Why that was, because the men probably were still sleeping on Sunday morning and the women were probably out working, as was the custom, working on the beach or near the beach. So outside of Banda Aceh, it's a real mixed bag of reconstruction.
With the adoption policy, what's going to happen to the orphans?
I can only speak about the Christian orphans, that the church has taken responsibility for placing them with foster families. I don't know. I didn't visit any Muslim organizations or government organizations. There'll be wards of the state in these refugee camps until they're adopted, or until they reach age 18, I suppose. But all the Christian orphans were cared for by the church. I suppose we can continue this over lunch, or if you see me around, we can talk a little bit about this. This is more of a slideshow, I guess, that details the work that's been going on there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.